Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I am a former middle school teacher. I'm a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. I just want to start out ahead of time by saying, I know that these are really hard times. These are really uncertain times. There's a lot of confusion and chaos out there, and there's a lot of hurt. And so if you are someone who has faced the tragedy, if your community has been ravaged by COVID-19, if you're in that place of hurt, I don't have any words for you. I don't have anything to offer, but accept my sincere condolences and just saying I'm thinking about you and thinking about everybody who is going through this. A couple of students of mine, former students, I should say, are living in New York City, and they were just describing the eerie silence that was normally traffic, but it had been replaced by this eerie silence followed by every couple of minutes an ambulance. And I can't even begin to comprehend that level of grief and tragedy. So I just want to start out with saying that today's podcast is going to be much more practical. I want to talk about what it means to do PBL when you are also teaching in a distance learning environment. And I know that we call it distance learning. Some people call it virtual learning. Some people call it online learning. There is some difference between those. The reality is what we're all experiencing is not virtual or distance or any of that. What we're really experiencing is emergency distance learning, right? We're experiencing something that is unprecedented and never done before. And so I don't want to pretend to be someone who can tell you how to do distance learning the right way or the best way or anything. But what I do want to share is, you know, what does it mean to do project-based learning in a distance learning environment, and share my perspective as someone steeped in PBL, but also as someone who's helped a lot of professors get courses online, who's helped launch a virtual cohort, which is different than online, right? Because it has a synchronous component. And someone who, like I said, just has a lot of experience with PBL. And hopefully there's something of value for today. If you think about the most powerful learning experiences you've had, there's a good chance at least one of those experiences involved a project. And this is where you learned how to do research, or how to ideate, how to work with others, how to engage in productive struggle, how to revise your work. And these epic projects were the very things that gave you those lifelong soft skills that you use on a regular basis. And yet, these PBL experiences typically take place in a physical environment where students can collaborate together, and you, as the facilitator, can pull small groups and monitor student progress. But right now, there are many classrooms that aren't classrooms at all. Teachers are suddenly shifting toward virtual and online modes, and it gets really difficult to try to figure out what PBL means and looks like in a distance learning environment. And I want to point out that there is no instruction manual here. There is no single one right way to do it. But what I want to share are some ideas that you might find helpful. So with that in mind, here are 7 key ideas for making PBL a reality in distance learning. Number 1, make the PBL optional. I've written before about how every student deserves access to meaningful projects. And I love the value of PBL, how it helps students develop those critical soft skills. But authentic PBL requires a significant amount of executive function and metacognition. And at times, this can be a stretch for students, especially as they hit that place of productive struggle, right? As they deal with the sheer amount of freedom involved in a PBL unit. And during a typical school year, you can provide those necessary accommodations for students who struggle with executive function. You can integrate social-emotional learning into your units, but you can't necessarily do that in a distance learning environment. And the other thing is, this is not a typical school year. Right now, amid all the uncertainty, some students might want something more traditional. They might want packets or worksheets. They might want to see their progress in a very concrete way, and that is okay. The reality is some kids are not wanting PBL. It's just not a good fit for them right now, and we need to honor that and recognize that and be okay with that. And for this reason, I think it's important that we provide options for students. Sorry, if you can hear my dog barking in the background, I'm trying to get her not to. She's still a bit of a puppy, and she has a scarier bark than she should, because she's a Great Dane, and she's just actually really big and friendly. But if you do hear a scary bark, please know it's actually a friendly bark. It's a pet me and throw the ball for me bark. Anyway, what I was saying is that it's important that we provide options for students. If you have access to book work or handouts or packets, allow students to opt out of the project and choose a more traditional assignment instead. You might make the default be PBL, but you say, hey, if this isn't for you, go ahead and choose something else. This doesn't mean that PBL isn't for them. It simply isn't for them right now. And that's an important distinction, because in the midst of the chaos and the trauma and everything else, they might just want something very, very predictable. And by giving students the option between a project and a packet, you're actually honoring their agency as a learner. You're saying, these are chaotic and unpredictable times, but I'm going to give you some control over what you learn right now. Number two is to take PBL away from the screen. If you walk into a PBL classroom, there's a good chance that you'll see movement and conversations. You'll probably see hands-on learning with tools and physical materials. And now you shift to students doing distance learning. And chances are you'll see students working alone in front of a laptop or a tablet. But distance learning doesn't have to mean being in front of the screen the whole time. Students can still do hands-on prototyping and engage in movement as they work on projects at home. In many cases, the physical environment might actually allow for more movement than a typical classroom. And this is what I mean. You can schedule project time that will be both on screen and off screen. In other words, you can meet your whole class in a virtual hangout or a video conference where you do a class meeting and then debrief the project goals and progress and then, quote, send them off, right? Send them off to their own work in their own houses, away from everything, and that's okay. You can do it that way. You can ask students to find supplies and to work within the creative constraints that they have at home, and that's another option. You can have students do hands-on learning, but then also have their smartphone on for synchronous communication. They might text or use FaceTime or make phone calls to their friends. And if your students are older, they might use something like WhatsApp or Voxer, and that's fine too. If they're younger, they might do a small group video conference. But the idea is that they kind of have it on in the background. I also want to point out that you can blend together lo-fi and high-tech tools. This is an idea that I explored in my latest book, Vintage Innovation. It's an idea I've talked about a lot on this podcast, but it's that mashup between the high-tech and the lo-fi. And there's a lot of ways you can do it. It could be sketchnote videos where they sketch by hand and then create the video. Could be blending together journals and blogging together to do visual blogging. It could be recording a podcast. The cardboard prototyping with 3D printer, if they have something like that at home, or cardboard prototyping and then videotaping their process, video recording their process on their phones. Just a lot of different ways to do this. And I mention this because I often hear people say, how do I get my class online? But a different, perhaps more relevant question might be, how do we help students learn from home? And what should learning look like in these times? And how do we create a culture of creativity despite the physical distance? And often when you do that, you're going to have things that actually take you off screen. Number three, be strategic about grouping. We've all had times where group work failed. Perhaps you missed deadlines, failed to communicate, didn't learn from mistakes. You get the idea. But chances are you've also been part of a team where you accomplish something epic together that you would have never done on your own. And in these moments, it can almost feel like group work isn't work at all. It's fun. At the same time, we also know that groups can get dysfunctional. You can have moments where one member does all the work and then other members do nothing. And so this is just what we see. It is so hit or miss. And this is why I recommend providing grouping options. Allow students to decide between individual, partner, and small group projects. You can vary the requirements according to the grouping if you want. You could create flexible requirements if that's more helpful. And I'd also allow students to work with friends. True, they may goof off and socialize. Then again, they're in social isolation. Maybe a little goofing off is kind of what they need right now. And so the idea is to give them choice and flexibility both in the grouping options that they choose and then also in terms of who's in their group. I also recommend using interdependent structures. Now, if independent work is where you're working by yourself and dependent work is where you're dependent on the teacher, interdependence is where the whole group is depending on each other. I have some examples on the blog post that go with this, including how to do brainstorming this way, research this way, the process for inquiry this way. I also get into an interdependent structure for peer assessment and peer feedback. But the idea is to have structures that, where they have to rely on each other. And that leads to number four, use structures to boost creativity. Projects tend to fall apart when they are too unstructured. I once made the mistake of saying, hey everyone, go create a documentary. Start by planning your project and then go do it. Nobody planned anything. Nobody did anything. And 2 days later, I realized we needed some structures. The first type of structure is at the macro level. This is where you have phases for a project. You might have an inquiry phase, a research phase, a planning phase, a creating phase. That's one example of it, right? You might follow the publishing process and use that as separate phases, or the engineering process and use that as phases. You might use the scientific method or the design thinking process. But the idea is that you're breaking it into phases. Now, there's a few advantages to doing it this way. One of the interesting things is that researchers have shown that people work harder when they are coming close to a deadline or when they're coming close to finishing a task. And so by breaking it into phases, you actually create these endpoints where people then work harder. The other thing is that it naturally breaks down a larger project, which can feel overwhelming, into sort of smaller chunks that feel much more manageable. So that's one of the reasons I love having a structure for, you know, phases of a project. At the micro level, at that daily level, it helps to have, you know, structures that again allow for that interdependent work or that allow for that creative work. And there's a lot of different structures. It could be your structure for doing research. It could be structures for ideation. It could be structures for giving feedback. It could be those cooperative learning strategies that you used in person and you've added a digital spin to them. So there's a lot of different options. Number five is to keep equity at the forefront. I think it's really important that we remember equity and that we remember that distance learning doesn't mean students are free of context. In fact, they're more rooted in their home context than ever before. And this begins by doing an audit of access. Do your students have access to the internet? Do they have tablets and laptops? Are they planning projects that include limited materials, right? So are you making sure that materials are available? Do students have space to work? There's a huge difference between, you know, a large family in a studio apartment versus a family in a 3,000 square foot house. I mean, it's huge difference. But access also involves time and opportunity. Are they watching younger siblings? Are they taking care of other people? I mean, we have to remember these pieces. We have to understand that there's a lot of reasons why students might not be getting their work done. You'll have students who are stepping up to provide childcare for younger siblings. You'll have kids who are sharing a single device. You'll have children who are living in a state of uncertainty and chaos. And all of that has to be in the front of your mind. it's really important that we plan for flexibility, that we allow for mistakes from the students. This doesn't mean that we are holding students to a lower standard of accountability. It simply means that we're being compassionate. It simply means that we care about them and that we're modeling empathy for them. But there are some other practical strategies that we can do as well. As a teacher, you might want to create a space for technology tutorials, for academic tutorials, for scaffolds like sentence stems, for front-loaded vocabulary. You might also want to send emails and even do one-on-one chats with students who are struggling. Lately I've seen a lot of these memes online mocking students for turning work in late or for failing to understand how to upload an assignment in Google Classroom. And they have these like snarky comments about, you can do Snapchat, but you can't do Google Classroom. But the truth is, you never know the whole story. And as educators, we need to assume the best in our students and provide students with guidance rather than mockery. Number 6, do frequent check-ins. I get that this is really hard, but a check-in can be as simple as an email or a Google form. It can also be as complicated as a video chat. But this is the idea that you make your presence known to the group by doing check-ins. One of my favorite options, like I said, is this Google form. You ask students questions about their goals for their project, about their academic progress, about how they're doing on the process. You might ask them to reflect on how their group is working together. You might even ask them how they're holding up during this pandemic. I found that it helps to vary the questions between open-ended ones and having things like a Likert scale or in a checkbox where it's a little bit more limited. Sometimes, how are you feeling right now feels so overwhelming to a student, but a simple checkbox allows them to check their emotions. So, how are you feeling today? Check any emotions. They might check scared or angry or worried, or you get the idea. This can be a challenge given the increased paperwork and communication teachers are dealing with. And it's especially important that we don't beat ourselves up if we're not meeting with each group each day. But a simple email or Google form can communicate your presence in a powerful way to your students. Number 7, start small. There's a lot of simple projects, smaller projects. It could be a geek out blog. It could be a divergent thinking challenge. It could be something like the Invent a Sport challenge that takes about 2 or 3 days to create. It could be a Wonder Day project that they do in a day or in a week. Now, all of these different ones are available on my blog. I have them for you to use and to download for free. But the idea is to just do a small project, a simple project, and to start there. The bottom line is PBL is a challenge in a distance learning environment. And there's gonna be mistakes, there's gonna be challenges, there's gonna be things that don't work, but it is possible. And I think for some students, not all students, but for some students, doing an authentic project is not only gonna build those soft skills, but it's also gonna be a part of what gets them through this time of isolation. And a part of what makes you that teacher that they remember forever. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts? Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for the hard work that you're doing in these really hard times. It's powerful, and I appreciate it. Again, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day, and go out and make something awesome.